Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Wow, he was so loud he scared me. Ladies and gentlemen, our wars winding down, and then our next war subject here at the outset of the broadcast today. The war in Afghanistan has cost Britain at least $55 billion. That will arise to a sum equivalent to more than $5,000 for every household that pays taxes in Britain. That doesn't include the Google or Apple households, according to a new devastating critique of Britain's role in the conflict. It's cost about $22 million a day since 2006 to maintain Britain's military presence in just the province that they're in Afghanistan, Helmand. The equivalent of about $40,000 will have been spent for every one of Helmand's 1.5 million inhabitants, more than most of them will earn in a lifetime. Could have just given them the money, you see. Of course, I don't know if British pounds are worth anything in Afghanistan. By 2020, Britain will have spent at least $70 billion on its Afghan campaign, enough to recruit over 5,000 policemen or nurses and pay for them throughout their careers. It could fund free tuition for all students in British higher education for 10 years, or the sum would be enough to equip the Navy with an up-to-date aircraft carrier group, or recruit and equip three Army or Royal Marine brigades and fund them for 10 years. Of course, what would you do with them if you didn't have wars? You see, this is the first full attempted audit of what he calls Britain's Last Imperial War by Frank Ledwidge, author of a book being published by Yale University Press this week. He estimates British troops in the province have killed at least 500 non-combatants, and half of these have been officially admitted. Britain has paid compensation to the victims' families. The rest are based on estimates from the UN and from NGO reports, and collateral damage from airstrikes and gun battles.
Worth every penny.
And the new Iraq. The Financial Times of England reports people are being killed some days, 712 during April alone, according to the UN, in a conflict pitting Sunni against Shia. Iraq has this year slipped into a deadly crisis. This is the Financial Times reporting. At least 66 people were killed in a series of car bombs just this past Monday. Many see the conflict as likely to worsen in the run-up to national elections next year. You're welcome for the heightening fears of a wider territorial conflagration and crushing any hope that the U.S. military withdrawal from Iraq would leave behind a nation where the myriad ethnic and religious groups lived in harmony. Lethal car bombings have been a fact of post-war Iraqi life. The violence, though, has surged in the past 2 months. The United Nations mission says more than 1,000 people were killed in violence in May. This report from the Associated Press. Violence has increased sharply in Iraq over the past 2 months, bombings in civilian areas growing more frequent. The bloodshed has accelerated since a deadly crackdown by security forces on a Sunni protest in April. The 1,045 civilians and security personnel killed in May surpassed the 712 killed in April, and that was the deadliest month since June 2008. You are so welcome, Iraq. You don't have to thank us. And so now to the next war. John McCain, yes, he was on a Sunday Yak show today. What do you think? Wants to spend time with his family? He was on a Sunday Yak show today, just back from his secret mission to Syria to meet with the rebels. And he reported on Face the Nation today that we got to help him. They're very dedicated. They're not al-Qaeda. They're not extremists, he said. He was not questioned, apparently, about the fact that among the rebels he posed with this week while he was in Syria were two alleged kidnappers who are still holding 9 of their original 11 hostages, I believe, in Lebanon. But they're good. They're good. They're good people. They're people-pleasing people, according to John McCain. It's easy to get the weapons to the right people because he found them. So it just, as we lurch into the next one, ladies and gentlemen, and I, first of all, How dare he say, first of all, at 5 minutes into the broadcast, first of all, there's no oil in Syria, so we can dispense with that maybe. But my pet theory of the day is that because McCain was saying, you know, it would be so great if the Assad regime were toppled because that would deny Iran its territorial advantage in accessing Hezbollah in Lebanon. It's almost as if McCain is trying to, in some way, compensate for the territorial advantage that Iran gained when we crushed Iraq. And Iran became the most powerful country in the region. So he's proving the old adage once again that to be an elder statesman, you have to be more than elder. Hello, welcome to the show.
You should dum 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 fly right. You should dum 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 fly right. You should.
I wish you would fly right.
You
straighten up, you better fly.
Took a monkey for a ride in the air. The monkey thought that everything was on the square. Buzzer tried to throw the monkey off his back, but the monkey grabbed his neck and said, now listen, Jack. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and stay right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. Ain't no use in diving. What's the use in jiving? Now straighten up and fly right. Oh, cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. The buzzer told the monkey, you're choking me. Release your hold and I'll set you free. The monkey looked the buzzer right dead in the eye and said, your story's touching, but it sounds just like a lie. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and stay right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. Bow, buddy, yada, be a bow. Bow, bow, buddy, yada, be a do down. Wee, bow, buddy, yada, be do dee. Straighten up, straighten up, straighten up, straighten up, straighten up, quick. Buzzard, you're choking me. Release your hold and I will set you free. The monkey looked the buzzard right dead in the eye. Said, your story's touching, but it sounds like a lie.
Well, straighten up, Papa. Well, straighten up, Papa. Won't you please stay right? Cool down, Daddy. Don't you blow your top. Fly, fly, Papa. Oh, straighten up, Papa.
Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. Ain't no use in diving. What's the use in jiving? Now straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top.
From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain in New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now,
ladies and gentlemen, we are proud to present Let Us Try, a ballad of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Let us try to stem the tide, to beautify our countryside. We offer you our hand. Let us try.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are 2 days into hurricane season 2013. And some lessons about what happens when you get cored by the United States Army Corps of Engineers. from the New Orleans Times, sometimes Picayune. Forecasters are predicting an extremely active hurricane season this year. Emergency officials are worried that residents have been lulled into a false sense of security by the new levee systems and don't have their evacuation plans nailed down. National Weather Service forecasters are predicting maybe 3 to 6 major hurricanes. The biggest concern emergency managers in New Orleans say is that New Orleans area residents have become complacent because of the praise heaped on the Army Corps of Engineers' completion of post-Katrina improvements to the local levee system. Who is heaping the praise? The New Orleans Sometimes-Picayune? CBS? New York Times? All right, then. Let's review with the aid of fixthepumps.com and a whistleblower from inside the Army Corps of Engineers exactly what happened last year. Hurricane Isaac last September, the first big challenge to the new $14 billion system that somebody was heaping praise on. Get your heaper ready. There were no problems or issues reported with the pumps, the temporary pumps at the 3 gates leading from Lake Pontchartrain into the city through 3 canals. None reported in the major media. But according to a cache of Army Corps of Engineers emails published at fixthepumps.blogspot.com, at the London Avenue Canal, 4 of 11 gates were partially secured, not fully closed against the storm surge that was coming in from Isaac, and one was fully unsecured. The Corps broke protocol and did not drop large sandbags at that canal to help mitigate the failure of the gates. But there's more. 3 of the 10 pumps at the Orleans Canal were inoperable, one due to fire. Nasty little nutty coincidence to have a fire in the middle of a hurricane. 8 pumps at the 17th Street Canal were out of commission. There was a massive failure of the data system called SCADA, which theoretically gives the Corps of Engineers remote monitoring of the water levels in those canals. If the water in those canals gets above the new low post-Katrina safe water level, the walls of those canals, which are the same walls that failed in 2005, will breach. But the remote metering that allowed, supposedly, the Corps to know what the water level was in those canals failed massively during Isaac. Emails show the Corps of Engineers was eyeballing it to get safe water level readings during an ongoing storm event. The safe water level in the 17th Street Canal was reached and exceeded. The Corps of Engineers, according to our whistleblower, exceeded their own internal mandated trigger level to close the gates and begin operating the pumps. A system failure coming perilously close to causing a catastrophic failure of the new improved levee system. So let's, what is it we're heaping? Oh, praise. That's right. Get your heapers. Let us try, ladies and gentlemen, the motto of the United States Army Corps of Engineers. By the way, there will be more of those emails published on the fixthepumps.blogspot.com site coming this week. I'll try to keep tabs on it for you. Happy hurricane season, everybody. And by the way, yeah, that's the same Corps of Engineers that Governor Chris Christie wants to have fix the Northeast post-Sandy. Think about it, baby. Think about it. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen. The Catholic Church has released the names of 29 priests in Melbourne, Australia, and it acknowledges they are guilty of sexually abusing children. Last week, the Archbishop of Melbourne, Dennis Hart, told an inquiry the church had paid compensation to the victims of 59 priests, but they only released the names of 29. So, 30 more priests yet to be named. Documents released last week as part of a settlement revealed that Chicago Jesuits, no, not the basketball team, concealed the crimes of convicted sex offender Father Donald McGuire for more than 40 years. During that time, Father McGuire was able to work at a variety of Jesuit educational institutions. You know, because educational institutions are where, who is it that goes there? Oh, yes, young people. That's right. The documents were part of a $19.6 million settlement between the Chicago Province of Society of Jesus and six men from four states announced this week. Between 1965 and 1981, Father McGuire worked at Loyola Academy in Chicago, Newman College, and the University of San Francisco's Ignatius Institute. I don't think he was named after the hero of Confederacy of Dunces. Just a guess. A 1970 letter written by the then president of Loyola Academy in Wilmette, Illinois, described Father McGuire's presence at the school as, quote, positively destructive and corrosive, unquote. That's before he worked at all these other institutions. Jesuits made choices time and time again that demonstrated willful indifference, said the attorney for the plaintiffs. Not one Jesuit official has yet to be prosecuted for their complicity in these crimes. Lawyers have identified 28 men who have alleged abuse by Father McGuire from the 1960s until 2004. In addition to his work in Catholic higher education, Father McGuire offered spiritual retreats around the globe and served as a spiritual director for Mother Teresa. Just gets better. The first lawsuit against Father McGuire alleging abuse also named and accused the Jesuits of failing to inform law enforcement of the boy's complaints. McGuire was convicted in 2006 and sentenced to 7 years behind bars and 20 years of probation. That's tough, that probation. Back to Melbourne, Australia, the Catholic Church has been more interested in protecting its reputation and fortune than caring for the victims of child abuse. That's not a critic of the church saying that. That's the Archbishop of Melbourne saying that, Archbishop Dennis Hart. When asked about the secrecy surrounding pre-1990 abuse claims, he admitted that the former archbishop had kept all allegations confidential. Quote, the church was too keen to look after herself and her good name and not keen enough to address the terrible anguish of the victims. He said it was better late than never that the church had taken 18 years to write to Rome to have a priest excommunicated after he was convicted of child molestation. Better late than never. That's in the Bible, isn't it? News of the godly. Ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. And now this week, the spotlight turns back to this country.
I guess I'm just lucky so-and-so.
Yes, interviewees beginning their answers to questions with the word so. A mini plethora of them this week on a fine public radio program in this country. As we continue our campaign to eradicate this verbal tick from the mouths of America's interviewees. So sit back, relax, and enjoy some interview answers, beginning with the word so.
Ms. DeRuggi, what about you? Do you have a different figure than 2.4% of GNP?
So, I mean, I'm looking at the OMB data. If you look at specifically the Department of Transportation, it's almost an 80% increase.
But wait.
We're talking about spending a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well, and so there are two issues with that.
But wait, there's more.
Is that an example of doing the wrong thing at the wrong time?
Well, I think what the with Kivalina, so Colleen mentioned the 2011 storm, but there was an earlier storm.
So she actually started a sentence and then realized that she hadn't said so yet and backtracked and got her so in. The initial so, ladies and gentlemen. So what? So there. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The British police chief, whose department handled the investigation of a pedophile ring, there's that word again, that preyed on young girls, has apologized for failure to act more quickly, but insists she won't resign. Thames Valley Police Chief Constable Sarah Thornton told BBC that the force failed to recognize a pattern of abuse and instead treated each case individually. She said investigators did not grasp that the abuse in the city of Oxford was systematic and organized. City council officials have also apologized for failing to take quick action to protect the girls. Wrestler-turned-reality TV star, Hulk Hogan. There's a succession of words that makes my brain fall asleep. Has apologized for posting graphic pictures of his burned hand on Twitter after his followers complained about the shocking pictures. The 59-year-old... Wow, Hulk Hogan is almost 60. Doesn't that make you feel bored? Was hospitalized in Florida after a radiator exploded, leaving him with injuries to his hand and fingers. He wrote in a post, I apologize for posting my burned hand photos with all the feedback. I now realize I really should take a moment before I make a decision, unquote. Yeah, like a career decision. Papa John's pizza chairman, John Schnatter, that's his last name. You've seen him in the commercials. His last name is Schnatter. He's schnattering at you. He's apologized to a customer in Sanford, Florida for a racist rant a Papa John's delivery man inadvertently left on the customer's voicemail. After he delivered a pizza to the customer and his wife Sunday evening, the delivery man butt-dialed the customer and left a voicemail message laden with racial slurs complaining about his tip. Friends, I'm extremely concerned to learn about the reprehensible language used by two former employees of one of our restaurants, said Schnatter in a Facebook post. Their thinking and actions defy both my personal and the company's values and everything for which this company stands. The employees responsible for this absolutely unacceptable behavior were immediately terminated. Unquote. Mr. Schnatter. Speaking of amusing public figures, have you checked out Toronto Mayor Rob Ford? Yes, he's in the middle of a scandal about whether or not he smoked crack and whether or not there's a videotape of it. He's now lost two members of his senior staff. Speaking to reporters, he confirmed that his press secretary and deputy press secretary decided to go down a different avenue. Not the Appalachian Trail, I hope. He thanked the two for their hard work. His chief of staff was fired a couple days earlier. During that briefing, Ford apologized for using the term bunch of maggots to describe members of the media that he believes have been hassling him. He made the comment during his weekly radio show. There'll be another radio apology coming up momentarily. Stay tuned. It's radio. BBC News political editor Nick Robinson apologized for originally identifying the London stabbing, one of the suspects in the London stabbing, as having a Muslim appearance. That quote was based on quotes given to him by law enforcement. The perpetrator, he said on News at 6, was of Muslim appearance and reportedly had been shouting, Allahu Akbar. The report generated controversy within the United Kingdom's Muslim community, who felt the comment represented an unfair racist generalization. So Robinson now says on the BBC website, I'm sorry for using a phrase that on reflection was both liable to be misrepresented and to cause offense. Many Muslims, he added, were quick to condemn the attack and to distance themselves and their religion from the brutal savagery we saw in Woolwich. Unquote. Dateline Gnadenhutten, Ohio. An Indian Valley high school teacher has apologized for what school officials called a lapse of judgment. The ninth grade science teacher was reprimanded following an innocent incident in which a student handed her a sketch of male anatomy on a picture of herself. The teacher, Rachel Cummings, responded by re-sketching the male anatomy correctly. Following an investigation, she was suspended for 3 days without pay. Superintendent Ira Wentworth says his administration responded with the strongest disciplinary actions allowed by the collective bargaining agreement, those damn unions. He sent a letter to Cummings denouncing her lapse in judgment by resketching the male anatomy under the guise of it needing to be anatomically correct for a science teacher. The appropriate response, he said, when presented with the picture in the original sketch would be to report the incident to the dean of students. Indian Valley schools expect employees to establish a wholesome environment for students at all times. Cummings has apologized for the incident. I publicly want to apologize to the board, administration, fellow educators, and to the community. Faced with an embarrassing and inappropriate situation, I made a split-second discipline misjudgment. I hope to deflect the matter by relating it back to science, hoping it would put an end to it. I wish that I had taken a different course of action and regret how it was handled. I received and accepted my punishment and learned valuable lessons that will be with me the rest of my life, unquote. She had received good and excellent evaluations since coming to the school 5 years ago, but now she understands what it means to work for the public school system. Deadline Manila, the Philippines' most popular comedian, has drawn anger instead of laughs by joking about rape. Vice Ganda, his real name, was speaking to a packed arena audience when he made fun of a leading TV newscaster by alluding to her weight and being gang-raped. His own network didn't air the remarks, but excerpts of the show were on YouTube. Ganda has apologized to Jessica Soho, vice president for news programs of the other network. Soho said she hopes his apology was sincere. Yes, comedians are always sincere, especially when we apologize. Dateline Phnom Penh, as we hopscotch Asia for apologies. Former leaders of Cambodia's Khmer Rouge, being tried by a UN-backed genocide tribunal, have apologized to the families of victims of the regime's atrocities. Khieu Samphan, head of state of the 1970s communist regime, and Nguyen Che, the group's main ideologist, were responding to questions posed by the families, the civil parties representing the victims' families, at the trial. Both men have issued expressions of regret before for the killings, but they have denied legal responsibility. They have been charged with crimes against humanity, genocide, religious persecution, homicide, and torture. Torture? They punish people for torture? What a kind of barbarian place Cambodia must be. Their statements were notable chiefly for the context. They were responding directly to the family members who had testified in emotional detail to the manner in which they had lost their loved ones to Khmer Rouge brutality. Still trying to get over that. They punished torture somewhere. Wow. We got to teach them American values. Dateline Pittsburgh, a state legislator has apologized for anonymously attacking constituents who support Marcellus Shale natural gas drilling and calling a woman, quote, an industry troll, Representative Jessie White. Jessie White apologized Thursday for online attacks that included saying the woman was dumber than a box of rocks. You get your rocks and boxes? I don't. Northwestern University officials apologized this week for a phony internal database that categorized student applicants by their parents' and guidance counselors' complaints using barnyard epithets and raunchy descriptions. It was a joke. An internal email that misguidedly made fun of the abusive and threatening calls and emails our admissions staff occasionally get from irate parents and counselors about our admissions decisions, said Alan Cubbage, vice president for human relations. He called it an error in judgment and apologized, noting the university strives to treat all our admissions applicants respectfully and appropriately. Humor by academics. Deadline Polk County, Florida. Central Florida School District has apologized after some students' irises were scanned as part of a pilot security program without their parents' permissions. The district intended to issue a letter to parents before testing out the tracking system, but the ball was dropped, it said. Rob Davis, director of support services for Polk County Schools, takes full responsibility, following up with an apology letter to parents 2 days later. He still hopes the technology can be used one day. Here's that other radio apology coming your way. That's an ugly sound, isn't it? Clearing your throat on the air. During a football match, I'll be okay. I'm going to drink some water. Fine, spring water. During a football match last weekend, during a weekend devoted to Aboriginal members of Australia's football teams, Adam Goods, an Aboriginal player with the Sydney Swans, was outraged on the field after a 13-year-old girl, a fan of the opposing team, called him an ape. The girl was ejected. The president of the opposing club, Eddie McGuire, apologized profusely, saying he was devastated that Goods had been targeted. The club had organized counseling services for the girl. But that's not all. Eddie McGuire, one of Australia's most colorful sports and media personalities, astonished listeners on his national radio show by suggesting that Goods, the Aboriginal football player, could help promote the new King Kong musical opening in Melbourne. You know, with the ape thing, the whole thing, he told his co-host. Once again, McGuire was forced to apologize, even offering to step down from his role as president of the football club. While we're down under, Australia's most senior Catholic, Cardinal George Pell, says he's fully apologetic and absolutely sorry for sexual abuse that has occurred at the hands of his clergy. And the president of Ohio State University said Notre Dame was never invited to join the Big Ten because the university's priests are not good partners, joking that, quote, those damn Catholics can't be trusted, according to a recording of a meeting he attended late last year. The university called the statements inappropriate. And G, there it is again. And G, in a statement released to the Associated Press, said, quote, the comments I made were just plain wrong, and in no way do they reflect what the university stands for. They were a poor attempt at humor and entirely inappropriate. Humor by academic administrators, ladies and gentlemen. That's a scary prospect. The Apologies of the Week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Well, please pay attention to me. Well, the last thing I heard before I drifted asleep. With children to tend to and a worry in mind. Too much to do, not enough time. I hate to be needy, selfish and greedy. But please pay attention to me. Please pay attention to me. Was the last thing I heard coming out of my dream. I got something to tell. Sun has gone down, and if you don't listen, I talk much too loud. I hate to be needy, selfish and greedy, but please pay attention to me. Why don't you look my There's too much to mention that grabs your attention. Well, please pay attention to me. To be needy, selfish and greedy. I hate to keep asking, begging and pleading. I'm down on my knees under your window screaming. Please pay attention to me. Please pay attention to me. Yeah, please pay attention.
having drunk a whole liter of water, this is Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, follow the dollar. The former director general of Britain's version of the FBI, MI5, is set to join the board of directors of the multinational bank HSBC. Sir Jonathan Evans has spent 3 decades at the intelligence service. He'll be paid about $200,000 to work 40 days a year. Work 40 days a year at the bank. He'll also become a member of a special committee HSBC created to help combat financial crime. The unit was set up after the bank was fined $2 billion by the U.S. over money laundering and breaches of sanctions. They helped breach sanctions against Iran and other sanctioned countries. The bank admitted having poor money laundering controls and apologized. We're delighted he will be working for the committee, that committee combat financial crime eight times a year. And following the dollar still more, David Petraeus, former Army general, resigned last year as CIA director. Well, you'd heard that he was teaching at USC, but that's not enough for a Dave Petraeus. No. He's joining KKR, the giant private equity firm known for large debt-fueled corporate takeovers, according to the Wall Street Journal. They hope Petraeus' experience and Rolodex will help the firm seek and size up deals, said people familiar with the move. The former general will be chairman of a new internal institute focused on macroeconomic forecasts.
Yeah, he knows a lot about that, right?
Communications, public policy, and advice on investments in emerging markets.
Really?
Main advice from Petraeus would be pay off the enemies and then skedaddle, because that's what he did. Former four-star general. Petraeus has traveled the world and knows military, economic, and political leaders. Those connections, says the Wall Street Journal, could help KKR land deals in some foreign countries where the firm has less experience and better evaluate the risks and rewards of offbeat investments. The former Republican National Committee chairman, Ken Mellman, now serves as KKR's global head of public affairs. They're all cashing in, would you say? Meanwhile, Dan Quayle and former Treasury Secretary John Snow work for Cerberus Capital. Kissinger is on the board of directors at Forstmann Little. James Baker III has done work for Washington-based buyout firm Carlyle Group. Yeah, they're all doing it. And this week, another news of the 1%, Hillary Clinton and Chelsea Clinton, fresh from her stint as a journalist at NBC News, have joined the board of directors, no, not of a hedge fund, not of a bank, of the William Jefferson Clinton Foundation. Somehow that all seems to add up. Oh, and of course, Hillary is still involved. The controversy about the attack on Benghazi, the U.S. outpost in Benghazi, originally called a consulate, later reported to be a CIA outpost. That controversy continues to swirl. As I say, it all seems to add up to another episode of Clinton Something next here on the show.
Clinton Something. The Wilderness Years.
Anyway, long story short, Hillary,
mm-hmm.
I'm getting major pushback on the idea of a face-to-face with you and Mr. President Obama.
I don't understand, James. I never had a problem getting a face-to-face with him before.
That's when you were Secretary of State. You were in his cabinet.
You know damn well Bill never saw half the people in his cabinet.
Well, I'm just telling you what I'm running into. The messaging from the Oval is that you can deal with the Benghazi messaging at a lower, more messaging-centric level.
I'm getting the messaging. But damn it, you'd think these people wouldn't want to let the putative 2016 nominee be hung out to dry like this.
You might think that. And in fact, they're not letting Joe Biden hang out to dry.
James, I know you haven't committed yet, but if you think Biden's got a snowball's chance, you should be committed.
Just saying. Look what they did with Susan Rice. Gave her the talking points, put her on every TV show on Sunday that doesn't have football on it, and then they dropped her like a burnt yam when their talking points turned out to be duck poop. And she was their gal. You, on the other hand...
am my gal. I'm very aware of that. Look, I'm not asking them to protect me. I'm a grown-up. I just think we have to work together on this. So look, State Department was decorative shrubbery for CIA in Benghazi.
Mm-hmm.
When the thing goes bluey, somehow they blame the shrubbery. I mean, CIA is paid to take the heat. Look what George Bush hung on them.
Everything but Dick Cheney's jock. And look what CIA did afterward. Leaked against him like a catahoula blue with kidney stones. You know, I'd love to help you out and pull some highly placed strings over there. But the most highly placed string we had over there was you. And you weren't strong yourself.
What about Kerry?
Oh, he'll fight for the department, as it's currently constituted, under him.
And not for his distinguished predecessor, the one who
sat on the butt all during his presidential campaign?
Oh, come on, James. I did some work for him in some key states.
Look, best thing you can do is what you're doing. Getting your butt into Bill's foundation and covering yourself with all that do-gooder fairy dust. A few months of that, and some nice high-priced non-political speeches. Benghazi's gonna be an issue to nobody but the crazy-ass Republican base and my wife.
Well, I think the only reason Bill put me on the foundation is he's afraid he might be running out of his own fairy dust.
Really?
Yeah. Big meeting at his office. Right now.
I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. Here's David Petraeus. Nice little private equity gig.
Mm-hmm.
Head of MI5. Nice little international bank gig.
Mm-hmm.
What do we got on the books this month for me? A commencement speech at Howard University and a public service announcement where I co-star with Smokey the Damn Bear.
Mr. President, obviously there are cycles in this business. Right now we're not enjoying one of our particularly up cycles, but that doesn't necessarily have any predictive power about what the second half of the year may have in store.
Damn, man, you're blowing smoke up an old smoke blower's behind. David Petraeus. He loses his CIA job by having an affair with his biographer, and he's advising an investment firm? Let me tell you something, Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
I know more CEOs on a first-name basis than David Petraeus has ever even heard of.
Well, I'm sure that's true, Mr. President, and it's a point I make in my presentations. In fact, it's top half of the seventh slide.
MI5? That's nothing but the FBI's triple A team. And a major international bank with serious reputational difficulties thinks he's going to do a better job at imparting a distinguished celebrity halo effect than I can. Man, that's eight kinds of jive.
Sir, there obviously are still plenty of opportunities that both meet our price point and are appropriate. And, of course, there's still the $1 million standing offer for you to go on QVC.
I am not going to go on no QVC.
Mm-hmm.
You save that gig for Hillary. She's going to need those women liking her again.
Fine. But your brand has been on the market for quite a while now.
Look, man, Tony freaking Blair has this $15 million deal with the president of Kazakhstan.
Mm-hmm. We were, as you might recall, very much in the mix on those conversations.
And as I do recall, we were offering me at a lower price.
I think that was one of the strategies we'd suggested as a persuasive lever for the president.
I am not discount merchandise, Adrian. Our customers think they're getting a better deal when they pay more for somebody. You see how much Colin Powell's believability has gone up since he raised his price for speeches?
You are, and I say this with the utmost respect, sir, what I consider one of our prime legacy properties, and that means we have the privilege of being more selective not only of what we accept, but in what we're being offered.
Man, you're talking about me like I'm an old-timer. I played sax on the Arsenio show, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm. That's on slide 10. Unfortunately, many of the buyers out there now in the International X official marketplace just happen to have never heard of Arsenio.
He's coming back, you know.
Well, maybe they'll have heard of him then.
Wow. Well, sir, this is the day I need to remember for my next memoir.
Well, Mr. President, in all honesty, I don't
think... No, Adrian, this is a true pivot point. After all this time, this may be the day I stop thinking about tomorrow.
Middle-aged angst and youthful ambition. Together, they add up to Clinton something. The Wilderness Years.
I should have packed me a suitcase. I should have said goodbye. Should have bought a ticket on the 105. I should have left this morning in the driving rain. I gave her one more chance in my heart. I should have took a train. I woke up this morning blue as I could be. Saw my morning coffee staring back at me. I heard a voice said, son, why are you hanging around? Letting a cold-hearted woman bring you down. I should have packed me a suitcase. I should have said goodbye. I should have bought a ticket on the 105. I should have left this morning in the driving rain. I gave her one more chance in my heart. I should have took a train. I fell for all her alibis. I can't believe in no one. That's a sadder frame. I took her word. I should have took a train. I should have packed me a suitcase. I should have said goodbye. I should have bought a ticket on the 105. I should have left this morning. One more chance in my heart. I should have took a train. Should have took a train. I gave her one more chance in my heart. I took her word. I gave her one more chance in my heart. I should have took a train.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe.
The Atom, how are you today?
All right. All right. So hot here.
It is hot in New Orleans. It's summertime.
Yeah. My quirks are sweating.
Your quirks are sweating. Interesting. Not really. First Energy said that an unplanned outage at its Beaver Valley nuclear power station, Unit 2 reactor, has been executed due to generator malfunction. Beaver Valley Power Station is located near Shippingport. What do there in Pennsylvania? The Nuclear Regulatory Commission has confirmed that due to vibrations in the main generator, operations at the unit had to be temporarily shut down.
Bad vibrations.
Bad vibrations, that's right. They resulted from parts in the main generator that have either broken or become loose.
Could happen to anybody.
Could happen to anybody. You're right.
You want tighter parts next time.
You do. Good point. The health effects from Fukushima are substantially smaller than those from Chernobyl, and the increase in cancer incidence in Japan will be negligible, according to the estimates of a United Nations panel. The collective thyroid dose of Japanese people from radioactive materials released from the Fukushima number one nuclear plant will be about 1/30th of that of the exposed populations from the Chernobyl accident, according to a draft report by the UN Scientific Committee on the effects of atomic radiation.
You okay?
I am all right. Thank you. Thank you for asking. Japan's nuclear watchdog says it tentatively ranked a radiation leak at the Japan Atomic Energy Agency's laboratory last week at the second lowest level on the international scale for nuclear accident severity. The leak caused a slight increase in radiation levels outside the site, and there should be, quote, no impact on the general public. Japan Atomic failed to properly manage the leak and used ventilation fans to emit radiation into the air, even though it confirmed radiation contamination inside the facility, according to the nuclear regulator.
Flans?
I did say flans. You shouldn't be listening.
You're telling me.
Burying a ton of orphaned uranium waste from Tennessee at the Nevada Nuclear National Security Site might require installing a concrete container to keep its radioactive ingredients out of the environment and its dirty bomb material from falling into the wrong hands, according to officials of Nye County, who were at a closed-door meeting this week. And with a half-life, ladies and gentlemen, of 704 million years for its main component, uranium-235, they wonder if the Department of Energy can maintain high-security vigilance and keep radioactive contaminants from seeping into the environment long after its containment has decayed. It's very difficult to look that far in the future, says the director of the Nye County Nuclear Waste Repository Project.
No kidding.
No kidding. They're going to do some sort of engineered barriers to put this into a trench. They could have some kind of hardened concrete structure at the bottom of the pit. We don't know, says Daryl Lacey. The waste includes remnants of New York's commercial nuclear power and reprocessing operations from half a century ago. Thank you, New York. If you can make it here, you can store it anywhere. The waste was converted from a liquid form to a solid at Oak Ridge in the mid-1980s and baked inside the canisters with cadmium components to stop neutrons from triggering an atom-splitting chain reaction.
Those bad neutrons.
Yeah, you are so right, Addie. The Japanese government has ordered the operator of the Fuk plant to freeze the soil. Here's another challenge. Freeze the soil around its crippled reactor buildings to stop groundwater seeping in and becoming contaminated. Every day, another 400 tons of groundwater forces its way into the plant, becomes hot, and needs to be stored. Plant operator TEPCO already has 250,000 tons of radioactive water stored in tanks at Fuk. Fearing the nuclear plant is running out of space to store the contaminated water, the government has ordered TEPCO to take the drastic step. The government hopes the frozen walls of soil will stop huge amounts of groundwater leaking into the buildings. It wants the system in place within 2 years. But there are no previous samples or examples of using walls created from frozen soil to isolate groundwater being used for longer than a few years. This means the project at the Fuk plant poses, quote, an unprecedented challenge in the world.
We like those.
We do. Really? The operator of the Fuk plant will ask for more public money to pay compensation, report said Friday, taking its total cash handouts to $38 billion.
Still cheap.
Still cheap. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission in this country is considering whether to impose fines on the operator of Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station after a series of medical violations were uncovered during a 2011 inspection. A government chartered advisory panel was told in September that materials spotted outside the inner wall of a tank holding radioactive waste at the Hanford site were possibly the result of a carbonite buildup, cross-contamination, or rainwater leakage. But internal emails obtained by a TV station in Seattle, written by the government contractor managing the tanks, so the tests conducted weeks earlier had already confirmed the materials found in the safety space of the double-shelled tank were highly radioactive and matched the chemical makeup of waste contained in the primary tank. And South Korea said this week it is turning off two nuclear power reactors and delaying the scheduled start of operations of another two after its inspectors discovered that the reactors used components whose safety certificates had been fabricated.
Just a little paperwork thing.
It's a little paperwork thing. New, clean, cheap, safe, too safe to fabricate. Our friend, the atom. And just time for this news tidbit from outside the bubble from The Independent on Sunday. Nazi war criminals escaped prosecution after the war because crucial evidence in Britain's National Archives and in government archives here in the United States was ignored for decades because we didn't want the Russians to know that we were bugging prisoner of war camps near London and Washington, D.C. during the war. Khmer Rouge guys might like to know that. Next time, get bugged. Ladies and gentlemen, saying goodbye to the great Mulgrew Miller, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system around Japan, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, around the world via the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, The Planet. On the Mighty 104 in Berlin, available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com and available as a free podcast through iTunes, Sideshow Network, and KCRW.com. And it'd be just like prosecuting all war criminals if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Exile, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead and to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO in New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. The email address for this program and the playlist of the music heard here on, you can find it at harryshearer.com. You can find the host of this program on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of the Change Is Hard Radio Network. So long from New Orleans.